Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Another great show for you this week on the podcast. Ken chatted to World Snooker Chairman Jason Ferguson about the amateur status and whether or not they should be allowed into the professional rankings. Certainly Sean Murphy doesn't seem to think so after being beaten by an amateur, so that chat is well worth a listen to. Also catch up with Stephen O'Brien and all the latest news coming from the NFL. In rugby, David Kelly, Irish independent journalist, joins me to discuss the latest debacle with Munster being stuck in South Africa with the new variant and their frantic struggle to try and get back in time for their Champions Cup game against Wasps, of course. And we also talk about the new rule which allows residency changes within the game, hopefully making the South Pacific nations that little bit more competitive in the rugby environment. Declan Drake covers all things GAA as usual, and we have a huge FAI preview with Alan Cawley and indeed with Aaron Callaghan, former Bows and St. Pat's manager, giving us their thoughts on who they think is going to win the big game in the Aviva Stadium tomorrow.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great. It's absolutely freezing over here at the moment. The temperature dropped a lot during the week and we're feeling it this morning.
Yeah.
But we're good. It's lovely and warm here in the studio. All good over there?
Yeah, we're in York, of course. The UK Championships starts today. Yeah. On the BBC and on Eurosport. And the beautiful city of York. Yeah, really historical city. And very, very nice around Christmas time. The old Christmas markets are out and everything. So I'll be looking to see if I can buy you a little Christmas present here, Reg, particularly after the four-timer last week from George. Fair play to him.
Absolutely, yeah. There'll be a few people looking to get something for George after that. So,
absolutely.
Of course, as usual, this is the week I didn't do it, but, you know, nothing new there. It wouldn't have won if I had done it, so that's the way to look at it. You mentioned the UK Championship, of course, getting underway today. Always a brilliant tournament. But one that's been kind of in the headlines a little bit this week. Sean Murphy not too happy with the status of amateurs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh, he caused a big stir saying that amateurs shouldn't be allowed play in our events, you know. And quite ironic from him, seeing that he played in the British Open qualifying for golf, like, you know, as an amateur up in Royal, where did he play? Up in Baltray in County Louth, yeah. Yes. But yeah, it was quite ironic. Gave out about amateurs playing in our events, but we need the amateurs in them because, you know, we have 128 players on the tour, and there's about six or eight of them couldn't participate in the UK Championship for different reasons, and because of COVID, they can't travel from overseas. So we need the amateurs who have just missed out playing to get onto the main tour by like a match or a frame, it could be. So we need them in there. Otherwise, we'd have to give six or eight boys. And nobody wants to see all the top players just getting a boy into the next round. So the amateurs provide those top-ups. So at least there's matches. And these matches are huge for the amateurs, to be honest. You know, it's 6,500.
What's that? Is he saying they shouldn't be in it? Like, what's his argument?
He's just saying that, listen, it's a professional tournament and we shouldn't have amateurs in it. But it doesn't stand up. I mean, he knows the rules. You sign a contract as a player. You know there's going to be top-ups in each event if we can't fulfil the full 128. And those rules have been in place for the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. So, he's just saying that but these guys have a free shot and there's no pressure on them. But listen, Reggie, I remember playing, you know, when I had no money, and I know the pressure of playing for 6,500 is quite a lot of money, you know, but and I've still, you know, he sort of come out a little bit too strong, you know. It's a very contentious issue. They'll be talking about it, no doubt, in the studio today, but it's sort of like the big guy having a go with the little guy. That's the way it sort of sounds, and a lot of people have come out in support of the amateurs and ridiculed Sean Murphy. He's got such a backlash. Yeah. From the media and from social media as well, you know.
You remember back when you de-eyed a tiger, Ken?
Those were the days. Come on, Rocky. Come on,
you can't
Rocky.
Beat him, Rock. You can't beat him. He's too good.
He's too good. Yeah. You're all washed up, Rocky. You're all washed up.
poor old Rocky. You can't be kind of hanging on in there. Ken, hang in there, bud. I don't play any of it. Speaking of hanging on in there, It's been a bit of a turbulent week for poor old Ole. It was always coming. We knew it was on the cards, but it finally happened. It was funny the way it went in the end. I mean, you know, a departure video and a, we love you, Ole. Yeah. You're the greatest and blah, 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 but you're out the door.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I felt sorry for him. He's been a great servant to United as a player and even as a manager. You know, when he came in, you know, after Mourinho, things were really, really bad. And, you know, we brought a lot of life into, you know, we had a really good away record, but he just couldn't get the best out of his team at all. You know, I mean, the Watford game, I think, was the last straw. I was at the Liverpool game. It was depressing, you know. The Manchester City game was just as bad, even though the scoreline wasn't as bad. But the Watford was really a new low, and they just they didn't perform at all. He had to go in the end. I feel sorry for him, but I think he won't lose his sort of you know, heroic status as a player for what he's done for the club. You know, and he seems like a good guy. Like, you know what I mean? He's a really nice guy
and genuinely upset that it hasn't gone right. You know, he really wanted it to go well at United. You can tell his heart is in the club. There's no question whatsoever about that.
Yeah.
And I tell you, he goes in a way that not many managers do, with still having the respect and the love of the fans. Most are fired out in their ear and they've lost their club forevermore. And, you know, it's a way for it to end. But for him, at least, he's gone on good terms.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's gone holding his head high, you know. You know, as I said, the last few results weren't great, but, you know, he did have a great run and sort of in the middle part and the beginning of his of the career at Manchester United. And, you know, he got some great results along the way. I think missing out the Europa final on penalties, that was really tough for him. But I just think, you know, watching those players as well, Reg, I mean, they have a lot to answer for. You know, they haven't really perform for them. They haven't tried a leg, some of them. And I think, I'm hoping when this new guy comes in that he's really going to shake the club up because apparently, you know, he's rated very high. I don't know much about him, but from listening to Klopp and other managers, that he's really, really highly rated. So, and he doesn't take any crap, you know, and if they're not performing, they'll be out the door. So, The club needs a real shake-up from top to bottom, for sure.
It was a bit sickening, Ken, wasn't it, watching all the players coming out with all of their tweets and their respect for the manager. And even when they went and won during the week and, you know, they got their... it was all about, so with this one, it was for Ole. And you're kind of going, well,
why didn't you do it? Exactly, yeah. Why didn't you try a leg, you know? But, it's all crap. They're only sort of looking after their own backs, as far as I'm concerned, you know, which they will do, you know, and try and get back on the side of the supporters. But the supporters will see through that, like you and I can, you know? And, you know, they'll be, you know, there'll be a big scrutiny on them now. You know, they've got a tough match against Chelsea this weekend, of course. And then they've got they did really well to get through in the Champions League, to be honest. I mean, for the first half, they looked like they were going to go down the same road as they were against Watford, but Ronaldo again pulled it out of the bag, amazingly enough. And I mean, they've got a big couple of weeks, and I hope it's a shame that they can't get a good manager in. I mean, this guy is only really coming in as a sort of director of football, not really as a sort of an interim manager until they get someone at the end of the season. So who will that be? I don't know, you know.
Okay, very good. Here at home...
Bring back Roy Keane. That's what I'd say. Get Roy Keane in there.
I think they're afraid. They'd be afraid of what Roy might do and say that they wouldn't be able to manage him. But he wouldn't be a bad... Certainly for getting the passion back in the players, that's for sure. He wouldn't be a bad appointment.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it,
I
suppose.
The first one he'd hit is Paul Pogba.
Absolutely.
That's for sure.
Well, he'd be gone. He wouldn't even get to hit him. Pogba would have left. He'd be gone down the road on his bike.
He'd gone down the road in his Rolls Royce, Reg.
Yeah, exactly.
His Rolls Royce
bike. But, I was going to say to you, look, we've a big one here on Sunday. I'm really looking forward to heading over to the Aviva for the Pats and Bows game. What way do you see it going?
Oh, I think it's going to be a cracker. I mean, over 35,000 tickets sold is incredible. You know, it's a great day out for both of them. And Bows, they'd be the old rivals of Rovers over the years. You know, Pats from Richmond Road. It's great. It's a great final for both teams, and it's a great day out. I wish the boat would have really well. You know, I think it's going to be a close match, to be honest, you know.
Yeah, well, we're I'm going with the lads, my kids, and
you'll have a great time.
I said to Charlie, "Who are we supporting?" He said, "Well, we're supporting whoever we're sitting in the middle of, Dad. Whoever's around." So we have to wait till we get to the ground to actually decide what team we're going for.
He's a wise young lad. He's a wise young lad.
He sure is the wisest of us all. Okay, I'm going to let you go, but I had a great chat with Jason Ferguson during the week, the chairman of World Snooker.
Yeah. I asked him a few questions about, you know, the amateurs, and he'll explain it a lot better. You know, he's a really good guy. I played Jason Ferguson in the final of the under-21s in Iceland back in 1989. That's how long I know him. You know, he's a good lad, and he's at the helm of World Snooker. And he sort of explains how our game is sort of progressing as well through this pandemic, you know, which are really tough times for sports all around the world. But we're sort of getting through it. But he's a really good guy. You know, I hope you enjoyed the chat.
Excellent stuff. Okay, you take care of yourself. We'll chat to you again.
Okay, Reg. Okay, look forward to it. Have a good weekend and enjoy the final.
I will indeed. Thanks very much. All right, Ken. That's our own Ken Doherty there, live from the UK, giving us all the latest on the UK Championships and everything that's going on. I did, as you said there, catch up with Jason Ferguson, the chairman of World Snooker. So let's have a listen to that interview now.
I'm with Jason Ferguson, who of course is the chairman of the WPBSA, which is the World Professional Billiards and Snooker Association. I'm delighted to welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport. Jason, welcome. I mean, we've been practicing and playing with each other for, well, we both turned pro around the same time, didn't we? We played in the final of the World Junior Championships in Reykjavik in 1989, all those years ago.
Oh, wow, you're taking us back so far now, you know? But Ken, it's great to be with you. Always great to spend time with you, of course. You're quite a character and great company. So, some good times over the years.
Some good times, we won't go into that.
No, we
want to be a little bit more up to date and, of course, the state of the game. But before I ask you about the state of snooker, and, of course, we're here at the UK Championships, big time. Tournament starting tomorrow on the BBC and of course on Eurosport. We beamed throughout the world. Let's talk a little bit about Sean Murphy and his complaints about amateurs in the game. What is the world coming to?
Well, you know, this argument's been around quite a while, as you know. Yeah. And Ken, you referred there to the amateur game and how strong it was, in sort of late 80s, early 90s and so on. And obviously seen so many great players come through. The amateur game is coming back stronger again now.
Yeah.
Significant investment in the amateur game over the last 4 or 5 years has really seen some talent coming through. Europe's becoming very strong. China, of course, very strong, big market for us. And what's happened there, you are seeing these top-up players coming in now.
Yeah.
They've always been there. A few wild cards here, a few top-up players. What you're seeing now is match-fit, sharp, high-class amateur players breaking into the professional ranks.
For people who don't know, why are amateurs actually playing in this event? Just explain to them how come Sean Murphy has had to play an amateur and a few of the other top players have had to play amateurs.
Yeah, I think it's important to say that this year is an exceptional year due to the pandemic. There's been a lack of activity around the world in some other countries where we've had qualifiers coming through to join the professional ranks. And as we know, there's 128 players. We try and keep 128. It's very easy to do draws, 64, 64 and so on. And that magical 1-8 has always been the golden ticket that you need to earn. Mm. The amateur game over the last couple of years has really had to slow down, of course, due to the pandemic. And what we ended up with was 122 players at the end of that season. We extended Q School by two places, making it 1-2-4, leaving four spaces for amateur players. The reason we didn't award those four players two-year World Snooker Tour cards is for that reason. A tour card is for 2 years. Mm. If we give another four cards this year making 1-2-8, this current year we're in now, there is now double the amount of amateur championships going on around the world.
Yeah.
There will be two European championships this year.
Yeah.
Both the 2021 and 2022 European championships, both junior and open age group, both mixed gender events, will be played in the same year.
Yeah.
Once we get to the end of the season, our target number is 1-2-8 again.
Okay.
If we were to award extra players and not have top-ups as amateurs, the following year, we would be into the 130, 130,
1132. Okay, now, that's too many.
It is too many.
So the reason we've had six amateurs here is because we only have 122 that have entered the tournament. So instead of giving walkovers, it makes sense to let the amateurs play in the tournament. And those ones who have just missed out in professional ranks by, you know, by the odd match or the odd frame sometimes. So you're giving the amateurs a chance. It's a good thing, right?
It is a great thing. And we also have to remember that the elite amateur sport has to compete with the very best in the world. Sure, otherwise, you get a disparity in standard. If you just allow the amateurs to play in the events amongst themselves and allow the professionals to play, you will find a gap will start to grow between that standard. We've seen it over the years, Ken. You and I have been around quite a long time, as we mentioned. I thought Sean Murphy, great ambassador for the sport. I actually thought he articulated his points very, very well, as always. And I think probably, you know, he's got a little bit of bad press, and people have said he was a bit of a sore loser.
But, that's an understatement.
But you know, in defence of Sean, you know, he makes a very valid point. And the point about the four amateurs, Mark Williams has made the same point. I know other players have come out in support as well. If you are in that elite amateur status and you are getting invited to these professional events, you've actually got the best of both worlds because you are playing in everything.
Yeah.
Sir Jahwe, let's take him as a top elite amateur. He fell off the tour. His family and the young man himself, they took the opportunity to stay in the UK, train for one more year, play in every amateur tournament.
Yeah.
Playing our Q Tour, our Challenge Tour, which is the secondary tour. He is currently the second ranked amateur in Q Tour, which is the secondary system. So he's effectively the second amateur in the world. So he's earned that right to be in that tour through results, a results-based system. So he's a very match-fit and sharp player. And actually, prior to playing to Sean, was only runner-up in that event a day before. He was match fit, he was feeling good.
But so what's the argument then? What is the case for Sean's argument? For me, I don't get it. I think rather than give walkovers, you've got to give these amateurs a chance. It's like the Rocky Balboa, like Apollo Creed sort of, you know, where the little guy comes up against the big guy, and you're creating opportunity, and also you're creating sort of encouragement to the amateurs.
You're absolutely right, Ken. We have to be able to create that great sporting moment if we are to thrive as a sport. And that involves bringing talent through. It involves finding younger players around the world. It involves making sure that young talent can compete on the highest level on the grand stage, which is what happened here. The likelihood is that Sir Jahwe will earn his tour card and be on the tour for many years to come. And that investment in the amateur game has been so important to our grassroots. You know, if you look around the world now, there's around 97, nearly 100 countries with national championships in snooker. The European Championships that took place, 49 countries with players feeding into those events. The sport is huge. We have to provide the golden opportunity for these amateurs to come through. The argument from Sean, well, Ken, you and I have been players, you for a lot longer than me, you know, there is that element of, if you're an amateur player and you're getting into something that perhaps you weren't, you know, wasn't your thing at the time, the argument is, are you under the same pressure as the player who's playing to survive on the professional tour?
But that's Sean's argument, but surely, and indeed Neil Robertson's argument and possibly a few others, but surely, you know, when you're an amateur and you're scrimping and scraping like we were like 30 years ago, these guys are scrimping and scraping, they don't have much money. I know what I prefer. You know, I prefer to be the professional who has money, who's earned a lot of money, and these guys have earned millions, to the amateur who hasn't earned a penny. And you're telling me that these guys aren't under pressure.
Well, you're absolutely right. Sir Jahwe, a player with the right attitude, decided to stay, train, practice every day, very dedicated. He is hungry to win and get on.
And he's under pressure.
Absolutely, he's under pressure. He has no idea at what point he will have to fly back home or end his career.
So where does that argument stack up then? That they're not under any pressure. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I think, I guess, Ken...
Because he's not playing for ranking points?
Yeah, I mean, if we look at the psychology of it, I think sometimes, you know, top players may be playing to protect their position, whereas the younger players who are hungry to come through are playing with that excitement that buzz to make it. And well, I get both sides of the argument, but I fully 100% support that we have to have amateur players and have to have top-ups as and when we require them. I think it is paying dividends for the growth in the sport globally.
And also, you know, if we didn't have top-ups, we didn't have amateurs in it, we'd have to award boys, you know, and players like Sean and some of the other top players would have just like walked into the second round.
That's right.
Not fair.
No, absolutely. No. We're a professional sport. It's about winning, losing. It's about competition. And, you know, I always feel it's a crime when I see a bye in a major event. When I know how many millions of players there are all over the world aspiring for that one position. And when you see a bye, you think, wow, you know, that's terrible. It's a terrible opportunity missed.
So what's the going forward? What will happen going forward?
I think the answer to this is to be patient. I think if I could ask one thing of our players, it's to be patient and bear with us. I don't think some of the players quite understand that that if we don't have these top-ups this year, they will be playing a preliminary round next year. Yeah. An extra round in every event. Ask them if they want to play that.
And none of them want to. It's enough rounds as it is. It's tough enough as it is. How about the state of the game? I know we're in the pandemic these last couple of years. It's been very, very difficult for a lot of sports around the world. How about snooker? How's it coping? We've no tournaments in China. We had supposed to have a tournament in Riyadh and in Turkey, and even the German tournaments now for January and February next year look in jeopardy. What sort of state is the game at the moment?
Well, I mean, the sport itself is in great shape. We know that from the viewing figures. Mm. We know that from the online media that people are following, and we also know from the participation numbers around the world. It's huge. The difficulties are travel and being able to move from country to country. It's hard for players to come over here play in the UK Championship. It's also hard for us to get to China without lengthy quarantine periods and so on. So, you know, it's a huge logistical challenge to get this tour back up to where it was and where it can go, because it's still growing, actually. Yeah. So once those travel problems are resolved, then obviously things will get a lot better. But the sport's in great shape, Ken.
Delighted to be joined on the line by Aaron Callaghan, former Bows and Pats coach, and of course player with St. Pats as well, to preview Sunday's FAI Cup final. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. All good.
Good stuff. Well, this is what I'm really looking forward to. I'm heading along on Sunday to the game with the kids. I think it's a great... I love the fact that, you know, these are affordable tickets for families to go to, and we're not fans of either team. We're going to support, as my nine-year-old said, whichever group of fans we're in the middle of, we'll support that team to be on the safe side. But it's going to be a cracking game, and 35,000 tickets sold already. It's a real testament to the way, the quality and the testament that football has held with for these two teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to help the fact that it is a Dublin derby. I think, you know, the stats tell you it's 21 years since the last Dublin Derby Cup final. Two teams who know each other from across the Liffey, as they say. And, you know, as you say about the family tickets, it's great that they're very affordable. And hopefully we get more than 40,000 on the day.
Yeah, I'd say probably will as well. There'll be definitely a few walk-ups. I mean, you mentioned the fact that it's Dublin rivalry, and it's such an old rivalry as well. I mean, they're two seriously passionate sets of fans. I was at Alan Cawley's live podcast in the Sugar Club recently, and you could feel, you know, that tension in the room between both sets of fans. That should add to the atmosphere as well.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, both of the clubs are embedded in the community, and you just have to look at the work that both teams are doing in the community. I mean, you know, you go to Bowls and the likes of Chris Breen, who started all this, you know, back when I was the manager, and Daniel and Stephen Lambert and Tommy Hines, made the community work they do in the prison and direct provision, and with all the local clubs is fantastic, and Pats are doing the same thing around the area. So that's going to add a little bit of flavour for the fans going in.
Yeah, well, Pats are slightly higher up the league table as things stand at the moment, but that doesn't count for much when these two get together in something like this. Where are you leaning towards? I know from Keith Long's point of view, he probably has some form players. I know there's four of them have been picked in the PFAI Premier Division 11 that were released, and Georgie Kelly's got 26 goals going, making him the highest scorer so far, a striker. It's are you leaning towards Keith Long's side a little bit, or how do you feel?
Well, I'm always a stats man, I have to say, Reggie. I'm going to look at, you know, there's been nothing between the two teams all season. I think Pats have just shaded in terms of two wins and a draw. If you look at the stats across all the teams, you know, even the goals ratio side of things, it's 1.67, I think, to Bowes, and Pats is about 1.56. So Bowes have scored just a slightly 4 or 5 more goals all season. And then on the goals against ratio, I think Pats have conceded less. So, you know, there's absolutely nothing between the ratio and all the stats that I've been looking at through the week. On form, you would have to think that Bowes have a little bit more in terms of the goal scoring side of things, particularly, as you said, with Georgie Kelly up front. But if you look at the goals across the whole team, both teams, I think eight players have scored goals from Bowes, eight players have scored goals from St. Pat's. So you don't know where the goals are going to come from. I think set pieces will play a big part of the game. And I think the team that copes with the set pieces best on the day will come out on top.
How do you feel about the fact that you've managed? Keith Long has been banished to the stands for this one. Unfortunate for him, the sideline ban coinciding with this final. Is that going to make a big difference? Is it going to be very hard for him to orchestrate things from in the stand?
Well, it will, obviously, from the stand. But you'll find that during the week that all the preparation, the team preparation that Keith and Trevor would have put in during the week, you know, will stand them to good stead. It is unfortunate. I think the FAI might have to look at that in terms, can they move that suspension, you know, till next season. I've heard Pat's, to be fair to Pat's manager, Stephen and Alan Matthews, they've both said, you know, they wouldn't mind allowing him on the sideline. I think it will affect it. I think that, you know, that era before, you know, there will be nerves in the dressing room of both teams before that. And, you know, when the managers are in there, you know, they can just relax the players a little bit. So it will have a little bit of an effect. But as I said to you, the team preparation will have been done all throughout the week.
Stephen O'Donnell, the Pats manager, he's more of a rookie. This is on his second season in charge. Will it be more of a struggle for him to maybe relax his players for this? You know, I'm sure he'll get caught up in it a little bit himself, the whole excitement of the day.
Well, I think Steve's got, as you say, as a player, he's got a lot of experience in terms of, you know, playing in the cup finals. But, you know, to be fair, with Alan Matthews there, I mean, I was assistant to Alan at both the Longford cup final wins and the team preparation that Alan will apply for the week prior to the final on Sunday. It will be second to none. I mean, just to give you a quick example of, you know, we had two teams that the team were trying to take all the pressure off the players. So we had, I think the first cup final, the team that we had was no change. We were climbing mountains for the club and for the fans. And then the second one, that we had a fish philosophy type thing where, you know, we tried to take the pressure off the players by dividing them up into groups of four and, you know, putting teams on each group to, you know, one, choose your attitude, one, try to be in the moment, another one, make someone's day, and then hopefully go and play and enjoy the day. So Alan will be very, very experienced in preparing teams for cup finals, and I think that will help Stephen hugely.
What do you think the key battles are going to be? What can we watch out for on Sunday?
Well, I think both keepers have had good seasons as well. If you look at both keepers, they've, you know, Talbot has trained with the Irish squad. Jaros has been very consistent all season. I think you've got to look. I think the game will be won through the midfield battles. I think, you know, the likes of Liam Burton, Tierney and Alistair Coote playing in behind Kelly are really good players. And I think, you know, if you flip that over to the Pats battle in midfield, you've got Forrester in there. You've got Robbie Benson, who'll be, you know, be used to and playing a few cup finals as well. So I think the game will be won in those midfield areas. I think both teams, if you look at Pats, they have a more patient build-up. I think they try to create a numerical superiority in the midfield, and they get the ball into that midfield areas, and then they try and get passes in behind the opposition back four, where I think Bowes is a more direct forward passing game where they can get, you know, they're trying to exploit spaces in behind the opposition back four as well. So you know, on paper and in the stats and everywhere I read, it's a 50-50 game at present.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put you on the spot because you like your stats, you've run through it, and you've come out with 50-50. So what's your heart telling you? Where is this title going to go?
I suppose, like, the experience and having worked with Alan, I think, you know, that preparation will be slightly better than Bowes, but me heart is telling me Bowes are going to win a 3-1.
Alan Cawley, good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you? Are you okay?
Very good indeed, thanks. Very good indeed. Looking forward to the big final tomorrow. Before we get to talk about that, just a mention, we saw last night the 25th goal of the season from Colm Whelan, and saw UCD getting promoted to the SSE Electricity Division last night. Great news for them. But beating Waterford along the way 2-1, and it's been a bit of a messy week for Waterford, to say the least.
Yeah, that's an understatement, Reggie. It has been very, very messy. And to think this was obviously going into the biggest game of the season and all the stuff that unraveled during the week with the manager and Mark Bertram leaving and stuff being put out on Twitter and text messages and all sorts of stuff. So it has been a messy week. terrible preparation for them. But I don't think we should take anything away from UCD either. I've watched UCD a good few times this season, and I actually saw them against Waterford earlier on in the season in the Cup, and it was probably the best game I've seen all year. It was brilliant. But UCD are a very, very good side. Andy Myler's done a great job, and as you see, that man Whelan banging in the goals for them up front. And I always fancied them last night because of another lad, Liam Kerrigan, sort of lots of goals in the team. They play a lovely, attractive brand of football. And I just fancied them to give Waterford all sorts of trouble last night. And it's a great result for them, but a very, very messy week for Waterford.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And 4 years in the Premier Division ends kind of in a bad way for them, which is disappointing to see. And am I right in saying, is there no Munster representative now? Or
yeah.
Okay.
That is poor, Reggie. And I suppose if you're looking at it geographically, you want as much of a spread as possible around the league, obviously. And as you say, no team from Munster, which is an unbelievable start, really, when you think of how big some of the clubs are down there. Cork City, obviously, you had Waterford last night, Limerick as well. So you have no representative from that area, which is not great for the league. It's very lopsided now in terms of the geographical spread. But that's just the nature of these things, Reggie. UCD are there on merit. Obviously, we heard the news about Brian Cabin-Tealy forging together as well yesterday. So it is unfortunate for the league, but as I say, you can't take anything away from UCD. They're there on merit, and they played very, very well last night.
Absolutely. Okay, huge day tomorrow. There's 36,000 latest count on tickets sold for the big game between Pats and Bows. Ticket watch, it's worse than the COVID numbers at the moment, the way they're counting the ticket numbers. But it's really testament to how important this final is, that both teams involved. I'll be there myself, can't wait. Bows, St. Pat's, 4 o'clock tomorrow at Viva Stadium. Cracking game in store.
Yeah, I can't wait, Reggie. I'm so excited. It's my favourite day of the year. I love the FAI Cup final. Lucky enough to work on the last few as well, and I'll be working tomorrow, and I can't wait. And as you say, the added bonus is the ticket sales this year are absolutely incredible. And it's probably an indication, again, of where we're at in terms of all the debate and discussion around Stephen Kenny's Ireland team and people rowing in behind that. And you look at people want positive change now in terms of Irish football domestically as well. And I think that's certainly a sense of that. The two clubs have done amazing work, really, in obviously promoting the game and trying to get as many sales as possible. But there's a lot of neutrals and a lot of people going along as well, just obviously to hopefully enjoy the day, enjoy a good game of football in a fine stadium. And the fact that we're going to have 40,000, it's just going to be an incredible atmosphere. And two Dublin teams as well, a Dublin derby. There was a lot of people suggesting maybe it might not kind of capture the imagination with those two teams in the final, but it's the complete opposite, Reggie. Everybody is talking about the FAI Cup final, and even people coming up to me who probably wouldn't have gone to the game maybe 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, but all of a sudden it's become the hottest ticket in town and everybody wants one. And I'm so excited for the game. I can't wait for it tomorrow.
Absolutely. So am I. Aaron Callaghan was on with us earlier on, former Bows and Pats coach. He is very much a stats-based man by his own admission, but he is leaning towards Bows to get the result done tomorrow.
Yeah, I heard the chat with Aaron and yourself as well, Reggie. Fair play, you're a great supporter of the league as well, and bringing the young fellas along. And you were right about the ticket prices. That's really what's, I suppose, sold it for everybody, is they've priced it so well. And they have done in the last 3, 4, 5 years as well, but maybe not got the return, but they're certainly getting the return this year. And it's a no-brainer, really, to bring a young lad along. I know even my local club out in Portmarnock, and they're bringing gangs of the teams in and coaches and bringing the young fellas and all. And I think that's spread across Dublin, around the country, lots of people doing that, so it's brilliant. But just in terms of the game, as I say, I heard your chat with Aaron, and it's hard to disagree with a lot of what he was saying, Reggie, because it's probably the most evenly matched teams in a final I've come across in a long time. It's so hard to separate them, and the only way I can separate them and kind of side a little bit with Bows is the fact that they have the top marksman in the league, Georgie Kelly. He scored 26 goals in all competitions. The nearest that Pats have to that is Matty Smith with 11. Now, that's not to say Pats don't score goals. They scored 56 themselves, but they're just spread out all over the team. Whereas I just feel with Georgie and the threat that he possesses, he could be the difference on the day. But as I say, it's very, very hard to separate them. Even though Pats finished second in the table and Bows finished fifth, there's absolutely nothing between these teams, Reggie.
I know, and that's what adds to the juiciness of it tomorrow. And it's funny what you mentioned there about just your point about the kids and everything else. I suppose what's important to get across here, and this is the way I would feel about it, and probably a lot of dads and mothers would feel as well, is that you're always trying to give your children the idea that they can achieve anything, you know. But the reality is, it's highly unlikely that anyone's going to be playing in the Premier League for Liverpool. You know, it's very, very tiny, tiny percentage of people are ever that good enough or lucky enough to do it. But if you're bringing your kids along to the Aviva Stadium to see the FAI Cup final, there is, you could say to your children, you go and work hard and play for a team in Ireland, play in the League of Ireland and blah, 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 blah. Someday you might actually get to play on that Aviva turf. And there's a very strong chance for a lot of kids there tomorrow who'd be at that game that that could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so achievable, Reggie, because it's on the doorstep. And this is the thing we've been shouting about for years and years with football here. Obviously, it's had its problems, and certainly Irish football hasn't helped itself in a lot of cases. But I slowly but surely, I can sense there's a change happening. And as you say, bringing kids along to that game tomorrow in the Aviva, 40,000 in a lovely stadium. And it's so achievable to reach that level, because for years there was no alternative. Young lads, myself included, had to go away. There was no alternative. All it was England. You hit 15, 16. If you're good enough, you go to England. Now they're trying to introduce roadmaps where there is an alternative for young lads. Obviously, the national underage leagues. So lads can maybe progress here through the pathway, eventually hit Pats, Bows, whoever shells, 19, 20, play in the first team, get 50 games, 100 games under your belt. And then if you're good enough, a team might take you to go to a first team in England. And good luck to lads if that happens. But that's a much more realistic route, and a much far better route as well, Reggie, in terms of lads going away 14, 15, leaving home, getting caught up in the net, as you say, of basically a worldwide kind of production of players. And the chances are so limited, where if you go down the route that obviously they're trying to put the... Now, there's a lot of work to do, don't get me wrong, but at least I think the start has been made on that. And the underage leagues were very successful this year. Still loads of work to do, but it's certainly very achievable for all the young kids that are going to be at that match tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be disappointing on a finishing note for Keith Long that he's going to have to be in the stands himself to watch this one. Because of the sideline ban. No way they could have pushed that off to next season or anything, no?
Yeah, it's a ridiculous rule, Reggie. The same happened to Stephen Bradley last year. And no matter who the manager, it shouldn't happen, really. This is the showpiece day for our league. And I was at the game where Keith ended up getting sent off from the line and the suspension. And there was absolutely nothing in it whatsoever, Reggie. And I felt the referee on the night could have handled it much better in terms of saying, look, give the lads a talking to or a yellow card and say, cop on, lads, and just get on with it. And here you have Keith Long now in his biggest day of his Bo's tenure since he started managing him, and he's going to be in the stand. Now, he spoke during the week about it, and he's trying to turn it into a positive, but it's so disappointing for him, and certainly something needs to be done about that rule going forward, because you can't have managers or players missing out on the biggest day of them all. And yeah, I feel so sorry for Keith, but hopefully, as I say, his team will do him proud and do him justice. But a lot of the preparation, as Aaron was saying to you earlier, a lot of preparation would have been done all week anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Alan, that's all we've time for. I'm looking forward to seeing you on the pitch tomorrow in your latest Benetti suit or whatever outfit to deck you out in.
Well, it's an Eskimo suit I need tomorrow at that match, Reggie, to be honest.
In fairness.
It's going to be so cold, but everyone wrap up, yeah.
Yeah, you will. You'll need some sort of a padded jacket of some description to keep you warm on it. But we'll see you there. Good luck with the gig and enjoy the game. We're going to turn our attention to rugby now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Irish Independent journalist David Kelly. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. Very busy on Tuesday. We'll cover my 10th international of this calendar month in both women's and men's soccer and rugby, but obviously the most important game of the month is tomorrow in the Aviva Stadium, but we'll say no more about that.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be there and I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait for a good day out and be cold, but it'll be good and it'll be enjoyable. But it's a nice complaint and an easy issue for us to manage, just a bit of cold compared to what's going on in rugby at the moment. I saw a very interesting tongue-in-cheek tweet from a very obvious Leinster fan saying, looking on the bright side of things, if Munster Rugby do get stranded in South Africa, at least the players can spend Christmas with their families. So we know where that's pointed. But joking aside, it is a very serious issue that's unfolding in South Africa in rugby terms. We've seen a couple of games having to be cancelled by the URC for the next couple of weeks. And obviously Munster struggling to get back. But it throws their whole preparation for the Wasps game on the 12th of December and even their ability to field a proper team is in jeopardy somewhat for that game. So it's a really, really tough situation on Munster.
Yeah, it's messy. I'm not even sure if they've managed to get a fight back yet, have they?
They're still working on it. It was the latest.
They're still working on that. So obviously with Stephen Donnelly's intervention, regardless of their status, they'll have to isolate and And that obviously compounds training issues. And then, you know, depending on the on when they get the flight back, if they get the flight back, in terms of days of isolation, I mean, they're really struggling then with the Wasps Heineken Cup game. Then you're talking about 7 weeks without a game for most of their international players, a lack of integration between the international and non-international players, and just the whole mental aspect of it. I mean, Craig Casey pitching up literally inside his hotel, walking in through the almost like the doors of the Sherbourne, walking in one revolving door and out the other as they're told to get out of the country. So and they can't get out of the country at the moment. So it's desperately unlucky for themselves and the other three URC teams who just happen to be on that roster at the moment. Whereas, you know, literally almost the look of the draw, Leinster have two home matches since this new variant was uncovered. So obviously they're not their supporters maybe, but Leo Cullen obviously wasn't crowing about that yesterday, knowing that there's bigger issues. But in the sporting context, which we have to look at here this morning, we're not politicians or involved in anything on the medical side of it. It's a devastating blow for Munster in a week that they've lost Stephen Larcombe, despite his expressed intention to stay on, which obviously, referring back to your humorous joke earlier, it loosens the grip of Johan van Graan on his tenure. He hasn't yet stated whether he's going to stay or go, and obviously we know what happened the last time a South African declared his intentions to stay at Munster. He was last seen with the jet exhaust fumes from the back of his airplane as he left. So it's a really unsettling time for Munster as they're trying to forge an identity which, you know, is intermittent. You see it there at times, and it's happening. It could be a really difficult few weeks now, especially if they have a difficult start to the Champions Cup.
Is there any chance that they'll be given time on this to push with the Champions Cup, or with the ERC? Would they change the dates?
I don't think Champions Cup is unlikely. I mean, the only movable feast is the ERC with Six Nations dates now. So I think in terms of that competition, I mean, listen, we're back to the global calendar and competitions merging into another. It was always going to be tested by extreme events, and a pandemic has tested the fractured nature of the Northern Hemisphere's global, the Northern Hemisphere's season, and the absence of a global season. But it is what it is. There are dates, obviously, in Six Nations for URC. That's not a problem. They will be refilled there. Obviously, sadly, without international players and without kind of maybe top of the ground stuff you'd like to see in terms of the combat. I think punters were looking forward to watching top class South African club teams who are seemingly ready now and at it against top class Northern Hemisphere teams, but sadly that's not going to happen in its right context. But no, your European Cup would be immovable.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Well, there was some action last night, and it was a pretty impressive performance, it has to be said, from Connacht, 46 points to 18 winners over the Ospreys in a pretty abysmal night in the sports ground. I remember them well. I don't miss them.
No, I mean, Mac Hansen, who like is a wondrously gifted kid, and he's intelligent actually, and I mean, if you look back to what, you know, Andy Farrell obviously brought him into camp because Dave Rennie was sniffing around to haul him back to Australia, but I think the Cork mother has sway, but with the Cork background has sway, but he's an intelligent player, and he's better at running lines and motion and activity, and like, you know, he's actually, I would think, ahead of someone like Robert Balakoon at the moment. Now, there's an element that Robert Balakoon has been developed here, and he should be ahead of this guy. But in terms of what they're bringing to their provinces at the moment, Mac Hansen is way out in front. But he told Andy Friend last night he thought the game would be called after about 15 minutes. You might remember there was a stoppage, and I think a TMO stoppage, and just this one of the several storms cascaded across the sports ground. But he revels in it. I mean, he, as he said, he was freezing his balls off afterwards on TV, and the run from deep and halfway. I remember speaking to him after his first game and that extraordinary try he scored, the gather of the kit and the run from deep and halfway in front of the Clan Terrace, and he just, you know, just a bit of rain, you know, so he doesn't. he's kind of like seems to be this sort of easygoing kind of surfer kid. He doesn't really care, but he's a good player. He's intelligent. He works hard. He makes his tackles, and he knows where the try line is. And he's really exciting. And typifies Connacht. I mean, Ospreys nowadays are just a one out team. They're not the Ospreys of yore. They really play one out rugby. Toby Booth, not great to watch. Reese Webb, box kicks. And Connacht, 7 tries, 7 backs. Despite the weather, and this is a bugbear of mine going back years, we can't play in the conditions, Northern Hemisphere teams can't play in the conditions. Yes, we can, because we train them all the bloody time. Mm-hmm. And Connacht showed last night that they stuck to, and they have them all that can work, but they stuck to playing ball through hand, playing expansive rugby, using the width of the pitch. And you should be able to do that rain come shine, because we normally have more of the former than the latter.
It takes higher skill levels, no doubt about it, to do that, but it can be done, no question. And that's just proof of it last night. Another cracking game coming up later on this evening, of course, the rivalry between Leinster and Ulster. Leinster not holding back, you know, the likes of Furlong being thrown in there, not afraid to go straight back into the middle of things, Henshaw and all of that. So it's a full strength Leinster team in many ways, and certainly one that Ulster will probably struggle to overcome.
Well, indeed, speaking as a former tight head prop of no renown, obviously the currently highest paid rugby player in Ireland should be getting flogged within an inch of his life after signing his lucrative deal. But it was a great bit of business to get him get it sorted. Obviously, there was the 1 year contract, short term deal during the pandemic, but this is just clears everybody's heads, and I think Tig will probably have about 3 weeks of eating spuds down the farm over Christmas, so he will get his time off. And this is obviously this will probably finish his little load. He'll have a week off before Europe, I guess. Yeah. I don't see Ulster really doing much now against a strong Leinster tonight. I think Leinster will have too much for them, and obviously it could be another second disappointing visit to Dublin in a row for Ulster, who are once more after a familiar early to start of the season. I know you covered them a lot up there. This could be a timely kind of start go wandering again, but they need to kind of just show some form, I think, ahead of Europe might be the main thing, because they did struggle to show that against Connacht.
Absolutely. Okay. Interesting call during the week. I'd like to get your thoughts on it from World Rugby, where they have reviewed the residency rule, and it really opens the door for we'll say the Pacific nations, where they may have players with parents and grandparents of Samoan, Tongan, Fijian, wherever it might be, roots, and but playing or living in New Zealand or Australia, they can actually go now and declare for their country, their through birthright or through familial rights.
Yeah, the homeland.
Yeah, it's an interesting change. It should be great for the South Pacific nations.
Well, my general thought on this would be almost kind of the reverse of how residency rulings used to be, which and this is a very broad sweep, and no doubt hundreds and thousands of Texans will come in and say, I'm a racist and I hate this player or that player. But my general philosophy on it was, whether it was Scotland, Ireland, New Zealand, England or Wales, I was not comfortable, given the very small nature of international rugby, that there are very, very few strong teams and so many weak teams. I didn't like the broad concept of players who were getting more money because they were moving to other countries where they could then represent those countries, even by becoming resident. Mm. And having family, it was slightly discomforting to me, yeah. Especially when they were leaving really weaker nations. And this may be applied more to the Southern Hemisphere and the Pacific Islands you talk about, yeah, in terms of New Zealand and Australia. So this is almost the reverse policy that players who possibly might have done that. And we also have to remember that, unlike maybe South Africans or Australians or New Zealanders, people from these Pacific Islands, they could be supporting not only a family, but a little parish, yeah, by playing professional rugby in the Northern Hemisphere, and are doing so because there's not enough support from World Rugby, so that they can give something back, not only economically, but then culturally and spiritually later on by playing for their Pacific Island nations, who, let's face it, you know, they arrive up in the Northern Hemisphere every kind of year, and they will thrill us like Samoa today against the Barbarians, and then they just disappear. Nobody cares. Yeah. See what happened. Even with Japan and Argentina, who would be established and are strong economic nations, like, their treatment is scandalous in my view, but nothing compared to what happens in terms of the Pacific Islanders. So yeah, I broadly welcome it, literally because it almost reverses the policy before. It would be much better if they didn't have to declare for a country, because economically they're being held to ransom by that country. That always annoys me as well, that even players who cannot declare for another country are prevented from playing for their own country, whether it's Fiji or Samoa, because of professional contracts. But that's another issue down the line, which where we probably can't intervene with because that's private contracts. But yeah, I think that broadens the scope of international rugby. Has to be welcomed.
And it'll certainly broaden the excitement levels, because there's no doubt there's some serious talent missing from those nations, and they come back to be competitive. It'll be serious stuff. David, as always, an absolute pleasure talking to you. Really enjoyed that chat, and we'll catch up again soon.
No problem, Reggie. Enjoy the game tomorrow, and I hope you're shouting for a certain team tomorrow and not the other team. We'll say no more. Take care.
GAA with Declan Drake on Dublin's Talking Sport.
We're going to start with hurling on the programme this morning, and delighted to be joined by our good friend, hurling analyst Sean Lane. How have you been since we spoke last, Sean?
Very good, Declan. Thanks a lot.
Good stuff. Now, before we look at Kilmacud Croke's Leinster Club Championship clash with Raharney of Westmeath at Mullingar tomorrow, we just want to talk to you in general about the Dublin Club Championship, which was completed recently, with Croke's winning the title dramatically against Nafina. Your overall thoughts on the Hurling Club Championship in 2021, Sean? Were you impressed with the quality of it and the standard?
Absolutely, Declan. You can go through it. There was obviously 16 teams started, but if you take Croke's, Nafina, Cool of Odin, Bridget's, Jude's, and even Luke and Vincent's, I mean, there were some tremendous matches, a tremendous standard of hurling across all of them, and some really standout games. The Cool of Odin game that went extra time, the Cool of Bridget's game, there was only a point in it. The semi-final or quarter-final, Jude's and Athena, again a tremendous game that had to go to extra time, and the Luke and Vincent's game stood out as being a top-class game again, so the standard was very, very high, and very, very happy with it. I think a deserving winners in the end, Croaks, although they did leave it late, Declan.
Yeah, but it was a quality final, wasn't it, all the way through, and you just had to feel so sorry for Athena ultimately in the end. But Croaks do what Croaks do, and they deservedly won it.
I did it, you know, and we probably didn't give them credit over the couple of months when the championship was progressing. We were saying that they hadn't been tested and all of that. But the reason they hadn't, Declan, was they were the best side in it. And they proved it in the end. I mean, they eventually broke down the Nafina full back line and got their 3 goals in the last minute. And look, to be fair, when it went to extra time, there was only one winner. I think they won the extra time 8-1. But what a display by Ronan Hayes to miss the penalty, like, and would, you know, in when he missed it, when they were in the ascendancy, a lot of fellas would have thrown the towel in, but he came back again and got the crucial goal again to bring the game to extra time. So fantastic display of hurling.
You just felt after that penalty miss that if Nafina had got one more score, they would have gone on and won the game. They didn't. Ronan Hayes broke through, got the goal, went to extra time, and there was only going to be one winner ultimately after that for Kieran Dowling's men.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, and I think it summarised it in extra time as well. It was 8-1 for Croaks in extra time. I mean, you know, you're dead right. I mean, Nafina just needed a score when Croaks maybe got the second goal, go up the other end and get a point. Had they done that, I think we'd had different county finals. But you have to take your hat off to Croaks. They never threw in the towel. And I think it's down to a bit of experience. They've been beaten by Coolum in 3 finals. It stood to them. They were the hungrier team in the end. Things went well for Nafina. Some teams go to a senior final first time and don't perform. Nafina can't say that. They really did perform, and a small bit of inexperience at the end just kind of gave the title to Croaks. But Croaks took it, and they were the better team in extra time.
Plenty, do you think, for Matty Kenny to be enthused about looking at the championship overall?
Oh, absolutely. if I go, and I'll briefly go through them, but you know, some of the players that I saw, like you know, take Crokes, Dara Purcell, Páraic Lenihan, and Brian Sheehy, three tremendous young lads. The Nafina side, Peter Feeney, Paul O'Dea, Todd had a great season, Cullum Curry, and look, Donald Burke was outstanding, but Donald's thereabouts. I have to say, two of the standout forwards that I saw was definitely Conor Callaghan, and unfortunately he's tied up with the footballers, but Niall McMurrah also with Ballyboden gave an exhibition. I think he got 5 points off against Coola. But there was tremendous standard, and you know, Kieran Dowling, we've spoken about him on the programme before, and Paul Crummy. So there's definitely a lot there for Matty to work on, in addition to what he has. He still has Chris Crummy, and he still has Danny Sutcliffe as well to add to that six or seven. So you know, and he's Dylan, as you would probably Trollier, as we'd call him. You do need 9 or 10 good forwards. I think they're there, and I think that, you know, there's certainly a good bit of hope with what they have. Plus, there's probably one or two that I haven't mentioned there coming through the 20s that can put a marker down as well.
You mentioned Trolley there, of course, will have to come back from the significant injury that he suffered before the start of this year's championship, unfortunately. Before we go on to discuss the Crokes game in Leinster, the minor championship A winners proved interesting this year. Raheny, Sean, now that just goes to show you again the tremendous freshness that's been injected into Dublin hurling all the time.
Yeah, and look, you know, it's not nice for anybody to lose a final, and I'm sure there's lads out in Vincent's are very disappointed. I didn't get to the game, Declan, but by all accounts, Raheny were the better team, performed better, and deserved to win. It's a new name on the Minor A Championship in Dublin, but it's equally great because the previous year, Oliver Plunkett went to the A final and were beaten probably comprehensively by Crokes, but at the same time there's two new clubs contesting Minor A Championships in hurling, and that can only be good for the game.
Unicat now 2 Sunday afternoon, Cusack Park in Mullingar. Kilmacud Crokes taking on Westmeath champions Raharney in the quarter final of the Leinster Club Championship. This is a competition, Sean, which hasn't been too good to Dublin over the years. Coola won it back to back, of course, and you had to go back to Crumlin a long time before that again. Crokes, how well equipped are they for this challenge?
I knew you'd mention the Crumlin one because I think a few statistics I threw out over the last couple of weeks, Crumlin were on the wrong side of them. Yeah, Jimmy Boggan, the Lord of Mercy, won a great championship with Crumlin back in 78 or 79 and Coola. I think Crokes will probably have a little bit of celebrating to do and probably have done it. There's 7 teams in the championship. Obviously, the key one for Dublin hurling people is the Crokes game events at Raharney. It's in Cusack Park on Sunday. I give Crokes every chance to win it, and only on the basis that you know, no Westmeath team has kind of made a put a marker down in the Leinster Championship. The other fixtures are quite important as well. I mean, the way the draw is made, St. Rhinas of Offaly, which are, you know, they're straight into the semi-final, and they'll be winning, playing the winners of Ballyhale and Mount Leinster Rangers, the Carlow champions. So you'd expect Ballyhale to come through that. So that'll be one semi-final. And the other side, I think Crokes have a great chance of going to a final if they get over Raharney, because they play the Westmeath winners of Clock, Ballacolla, or Rapparees. Rapparees, as you know, is managed by Declan Root, a former Wexford hurler. So the 4 semi-finals, as I give Crokes a great chance, but I think they'll be up against Rapparees in the semi-final. And the other semi-final, look, Ballyhale will probably seem to have enough for too much for all of them, but they'll have a tough battle against Ryan's as well.
But a word of caution for Kilmacud Crokes. Coola won the county title 2 years ago and then went into Leinster Club Championship. The last time was played, of course, before the current pandemic, which we're still unfortunately not out of by any means. So there's signs of warning there for them, that the attitude has to be spot on. But winter hurling, Sean, can be an absolute leveller as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think pointing that out is very, very crucial. And if you look at the Carlow Championship, Mount Leinster Rangers have won it 4 of the last 5 years. So Mullins, the year they did win it, they turned Coola over, who are all Ireland champions. But maybe Coola were a little bit tired and had a lot of their legs on. This is a fit young Crokes team. Why wouldn't they go and get to a Leinster final and put their chest out against Ballyhale Shamrocks? If it was Coola 5 or 6 years ago, that's exactly what Coola did. They were beaten in their first one but by Eulert and Abella. Coola were down in Carlo, but came back after that and won two Leinsters and went on and won two Ireland's. Now, that Crokes team was only beaten a couple of points all of those years. The Crokes team we have now is actually better than the one it was 4 or 5 years ago that lost to Coola. So there's no reason why Crokes couldn't go all the way to a Leinster final and put their might against Ballyhale and see how they get on.
It's funny, Sean, you had a great experience as a manager yourself with minors and under-21s and that over the years, and but this time of the year you're looking forward to a new season. What would the likes of Matty Kenny be doing now over the next few weeks? Is it organising gym programmes, booking sessions, talking to players, trying to get his squad together for next year?
Well, I suppose I'll go back to not the first year I did the County 21 team, but the second year, because we were beaten by Kilkenny the first year by only a couple of points in Carlow. But I did meet Jimmy Barry Murphy, and he gave me the greatest advice. He said, your job, he said, is to get the best players in the county to play for you and get the very best out of the best players on the field. Now, I think the first thing he needs to do is get a panel together for himself. As I said, a couple of the aforementioned names from the championship should be added to the panel. There may be one or two will have to go. So get his strong panel of 33 or 34, and then you'll have to put out your gym programs, your strength and conditioning, appoint the proper team around you. You know, if you want to change a selector or two, Brian Cody does it every second year or so. He maybe need to do that, change the strength and conditioning, etc., etc. Have a brand new team and be ready to go. The National League, as far as I know, Declan, is probably the end of January, so it's a very, very quick start. So get the right squad, get the right players, sit them down, tell them what you want to do, and have your task plan, as we used to call it. Say, we have to play these matches, we have to do these training sessions, we have to go to the gym, you know, and keep talking to them and keep listening to them. There'll be concerns, but I think Matty's in a good place, because Matty probably knows 90% of what his panel's going to be, because he's on his tour year now, where other managers other than Brian Cody will be trying to find their feet. So I think he's a long way down the road. Last year was an improvement on the previous year. If we get another improvement, God knows where we'll end up. But remember one thing we do have this year, which we didn't have for the last couple of years. We have a brand new manager over in Galway, and he knows a little bit about hurling too, Henry Shefflin.
Just a little bit, Sean. Just a little bit is right. Yeah, it'll be fascinating, because I think the championship is going back to a round robin in the province next year, which will be a major difference to what it was this year as well. But look, we're going to enjoy the Christmas, whatever happens. The Kilmacud Crokes, we wish them every success in against Raharney, tomorrow afternoon in Cusick Park in Mullingar. Sean, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Pleasure as always to talk to you.
You're welcome, Dick.
Turning our attention to football, and Kilmacud Crokes are the go-ahead Dublin Senior 1 football champions for 2021. The Stillorgamen duly completed the county double with a 1-7-1-6 final victory over St Jude's at Parnell Park last Sunday. Callum Pearson's stoppage time winner securing the title there for the Purple and Gold. After the game on the Parnell Park pitch, I took the opportunity to speak to the winning manager, Robbie Brennan. Robbie, whatever the hurlers can do in Glenalbum, the footballers can do as well. They were 9 down last week. You were 5 down this week in the county final. Same result, though.
Yeah, look, we didn't have to go to extra time, Decker. I'm not sure the heart would have left it, but huge. We did it the hard way, both squads, and it's massive, a huge thing for the club to be able to have won both senior championships and minors and everything else that's going on. So massive relief to get over the line.
Let's be honest, the first half was terrible. You managed just 1 point in that first half. What did you say to them at halftime?
It was a strange game. Like, if you said, considering, I suppose, the firepower we have, and indeed Jude's, that we'd only score a point in 30 minutes, I wouldn't have believed you, to be honest with you. I'd been calling for the white coats. But listen, we just said, keep at it, because luckily Jude's hadn't pulled away to a huge extent that they were out of sight, so we knew we could keep digging in. I probably left it too late, but thankfully just got there, yeah.
5 points down in the second half, then the comeback started, led by Paul Manny, then they got the goal from Keane and actually went in front then after that.
Yeah, there was huge momentum change. We started to win a couple of breaks around the middle. They'd been so dominant on their kickouts and winning breaking ball around there that we felt if we could gain parity or win one or two, we might get a bit of momentum, and luckily we did at that particular time.
everyone talks about the strength of the squad, and then Callum comes off the bench and ultimately kicks the winner for you.
Yeah, he's a legend, Callum. He's one of those kids. He's a genius at times, and he's off the wall at other times. But I wouldn't have anybody else. I knew bringing him in, he just no panic to him. He wouldn't faze him whatsoever. It's just another game to him. So I'm delighted for him. Delighted he got it. Yeah.
Of course, it extends your footballing year the same as the hurlers. Well, they're out next week against Raharney, I think, from Westmeath. I'm not quite sure. I think it's the Meath Champions. This is you're playing in 2 weeks' time now. So a campaign that will mean you'll have a serious intent on this year, Robbie. And we won't mention the M word after the last time.
No, definitely not mention it. No.
Who lost today, by the way?
We lost it, I heard that. Just shows in Leinster it's so tough to win. But no, we're playing Wolftones, who's my father's club. So he played with them and won a championship with them in 74, I think it was, or something. So there'll be a huge bit of local interest for us personally as a family. But listen, we'll be joined tonight down to work Tuesday, and we're back prepping for Tones, yeah.
Finally, to ladies football and the news that Dublin's four-time All-Ireland winning boss Mick Bone is staying on for 2022. He had his appointment for a sixth consecutive year ratified at the county board meeting during the week. On the pitch, it's particularly busy for three of our Dublin county champions in Leinster club action this weekend. St. Sylvester's, our intermediate queens, are away to Ballyroan of Laois. That's this afternoon at 1:30. While tomorrow afternoon, our junior champions, St. Jude's, will be in quarter-final action away to Skreen. And the big one then is at Bray Emmett's GAA club, also from 1:30. Defending Leinster champions Foxrock Cabinteely continuing their quest for seven in a row when they welcome Offaly's Tullamore to the County Wicklow venue.
It's time to turn our attention to the NFL now. I'm delighted to be joined, as always, by Stephen O'Brien. Morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good, Reg. It's another good week to be a Packers fan. Delighted.
It is indeed. That's another good week to be a memes fan as well, because it's taken off with Aaron Rodgers. He's at it again. What's he doing now? Showing off his injury or something?
He's putting the foot up to the camera, yeah, and of course it goes viral. Look, it's just another Aaron Rodgers having an absolutely incredible season last season because he was an MVP. And then this season, is, as you said, he's the MVP of memes, because in the off-season, you know, he was complaining and there was all these stories coming out and he never said anything, but people start coming to conclusions. So then this wave of Karen Rodgers memes comes out. You know, the whole meme about Karen and she complains to the manager. So it's that thing. Yeah. That came out. So then he, you know, comes out with this blockbuster news conference and states his case and out the world is right again. And then he gets tackled on the field a couple of weeks ago and his helmet's half off and he's looking towards the sideline. And that sort of shock and anger pick is just glorious. And then that goes viral. And then he starts retweeting all this type of stuff. Then it turns out, Reg, that he's got COVID and he wasn't vaccinated despite saying he was immunized. And then he Tommy guns the woke mob. And then he mentions Joe Rogan saying, oh, I spoke to Joe Rogan and he said it all was fine. So then the internet explodes for that. And then he came out and apologized. So this latest one, so he had COVID. He came back against the Seahawks, which is the game we went to, and then they lost against the Vikes. But it came out that he had this toe issue. So everyone's reading into it, going, oh, well, where did this come from? Did he drop something on his toe? Did he kick something in anger? And then someone said, oh, do you know what this might be? This might be COVID toe. And people are like, COVID toe? So then that came out, and then he was talking to Pat McAfee on his show every Tuesday. It's well worth the listen. It's brilliant because he's very candid. He doesn't usually give interviews to anybody else, but he really takes the mickey on this show. So Pat McAfee's kind of goading him a bit, saying, oh, what is this toe injury? And at the very end, Reg, he goes, oh, well, it's COVID toe. And you can see it's totally tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
But of course, the Washington Post, everybody jumps on it and goes, this is why Aaron Rodgers is so selfish. And so they start releasing all these like grisly pictures of what COVID toe looks like, which is hard to say in live radio. And so then he gets into this news conference. And instead of just saying, look, I want to clear it up, I don't have it, or in his usual style of just not saying anything, next thing he whips out the foot. And it's sort of, he's become really eccentric. It's great. And he puts his foot up to the camera and starts showing his pinky toe and proving that he doesn't have lesions on it. So now that's gone viral. So everyone's gone with that thing. And everyone's like, oh, this is my quarterback. And now his profile photo on Twitter is just him with his bare foot up to the camera, which anybody who doesn't know the context of it is weird. But by far the best thing that has come out of it is the joke that someone said, where they were like, oh, he's always contacting Joe Rogan with medical advice. Who did he contact this time? Toe Rogan. And that just shows, Reg, that the internet is undefeated.
There's no question about it. They've little to worry about. Any football going on in the middle of all of this? You know, that's kind of what we're here about, just not toes or COVID or anything else in between. I suppose the Patriots, everybody expected them to crash and burn without Brady, but they're top of their division, joint top of their division. Is Belichick going to create another monster?
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, see, the thing is, everyone focuses on Tom Brady, and rightly so, because he left the Patriots, went on to the Bucs, and won it all in his first year. So all of the focus is always on him. And then when they looked at the Brady-Bill Belichick partnership, they were thinking, oh, well, how much of this was Bill Belichick? Because he was always seen as this genius. But what people sort of overlook about the Brady era with Belichick is just stellar defenses. And they have one again, and they quietly have one, because everyone was focusing on the controversial decision, Reg, where they had Cam Newton. They let him go in the preseason, and they stuck with a rookie called Mac Jones. Mac Jones had the same sort of photo style body as Tom Brady. Nothing special to look at. He looks like a big lumber in Egypt walking along, you know. And then he comes out, and he's been one of the most accurate quarterbacks ever. But he's expected to do very little, I will say. But what he is doing is absolutely fantastic. They have a good running game, but their defense is what really wins it for me. I mean, you know, and they harbour that underdog mentality. They were 2-4, and that really jazzes up the defense to try to prove themselves. They went on a 5-game winning streak, and the defense have scored more points than they have allowed, which is absolutely incredible from your defense. But as I said, Mac Jones, you know, here's a rookie, and with the season that they had last season, Reg, everyone's sort of looking at Belichick and going, oh, well, maybe he wasn't all that, and he needed Tom Brady, and it was just that moment in time that he could build that dynasty. But Cam Newton goes on, you know, wins where he's at, and Mac Jones comes in, and he's just really, really accurate. I think he had something like an 80% completion percentage, which is like crazy high. You're looking at between the 60s and 70s usually. So he's doing absolutely fantastic as well. So Belichick is just kind of proving again that, you know, he can build a roster with aging veterans, which is he always goes out and gets these aging veterans and makes it work. And that in that sort of separation between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, that both of them now are starting to find success. They're 7-4, Reg, on the season after that 5-game winning streak. It's probably too young and too early to say he's building a dynasty. But again, it just goes to show how good he is at adapting to the situation that he has. And it looks like he's building something really, really special in New England again.
Yeah, sounds a bit like Moneyball in some ways, but for veterans.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about going into week 12 here. So the power rankings, who's looking good at this stage? Who's playoff bound? And who's out of it at this stage?
Yeah, we can already call the people who are out. It's still very tight at the top. And it really is the worst season ever, and I would say this with my ACA, but it's the worst season ever for betting, because they prove week in, week out, Reds, that the underdogs are beating the spread, you know, week on week, and it's incredible to watch. And that's why when we look at teams like the Cardinals, you know, they would sort of be at the top of everyone's list, because the Packers beat them up and people sort of question their legitimacy then, thinking, are they as good as people think they are? But then their defense now is number one. They've been without the superstar quarterback for 3 weeks, and they've won 2 out of those 3. So they look legit now still. Tampa Bay, we were on the radio here a couple of weeks ago talking about, you know, can they stop the skid? What's happening with them? And again, Gronkowski comes back and they're doing really well. The Packers, I mean, my team, you know, they're against all odds. It seems that the injuries are insurmountable, but every week they come in and they put a good showing up. Against the Vikings, for instance, like, I mean, we lost an unholy amount of players, but we still put it up to that team. But now we're coming up against a fierce defensive line with the Rams, and Matt Stafford is used to playing in the cold. So we'll really see what they're all about. The Chiefs, Reg, I mean, this was a team that we couldn't say enough good things about. They're 7-4 on the season. If you look at that, you think, oh, well, they must be sort of, you know, swanning along doing great. But Patrick Mahomes has really struggled. They're kind of the people at the top of the list. You know, we have the Titans in the mix as well, but they've been sort of hot or cold. And of course, as always, down the bottom, the Lions, they still haven't won a game. They've tied a game, which somehow is like a loss. And they've lost 3 times this season, Reg, with a last gasp field goal. Now, if someone was to tell you that, you would say, oh, well, they must be there and thereabout. But when you saw them on Thanksgiving, you just see what an absolutely poor team they are. They're poorly coached. They play poorly. They make manky decisions. And then there's the teams that are perpetually in the bottom too. I mean, look at the Jets, exciting new coach with Robert Saleh. They're really inconsistent. Sometimes they look promising. Sometimes they look like an absolute dumpster fire. Speaking of the Jacksonville Jags, they drafted a generational talent with Trevor Lawrence. We were waxing lyrical about him, how great he was. They brought in a head coach from the college ranks. There's that sleazy barroom scandal he was enveloped in, the people not respecting him. The real shocker for me as well has been the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Lastly, because, you know, Russell Wilson, he was flying high. An awful lot of the listeners who like NFL will have jumped on the Seahawks bandwagon. And I don't blame them, because they were a fantastic team. What a team to see when you start getting into the NFL. But now they're 3-7. Wilson is injured. He comes back and gets spanked by the Packers. and they look really in the doldrums now. They used to be built on a good defense. They don't have that anymore. So it is really a team in transition, so much so that Russell Wilson was sounding off in the offseason, wasn't he, about trying to leave the team, that he wasn't satisfied. Yeah. You can kind of see why now. He's injured the team or are down in the bottom rank, so it's not looking good. But yeah, really exciting season, very up and down and very inconsistent across the whole between the good teams and the bad teams, Reg.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.